Good morning. Good morning, and good morning to you too. I am coming to you from Italy. Yes, that's where I am right now, sitting in the rain, looking out at the mountains of Tuscany, working on another book for you, and having experienced the beauty and the racial ignorance of Italy. It is an amazing place. But also, they have such anti-immigrant bias here. They have colorism here. They have the beauty of the olive groves that expand for miles and miles over these gorgeous, lush hills. They have the vineyards that are, some have said, over 1,000 years old. And they have such racism that sometimes I walk down the street and the cars come a little too close at 50 miles an hour for my comfort. But the ancestors, Dr. Carter G. Woodson and Ida B. Wells Barnett, so many others, along with Frederick Douglass and Delaney and Delancey, and so many, went around this world and decided that it does not belong to all white people. And so I believe the same thing. I am watching my back and look forward to your prayers, but the hostilities against people of color and especially against people of African descent is global. And today is nothing different than if I decided, I guess, to walk around the United States in certain places, I would feel the same way, unfortunately. I think about Malcolm X. We know that May 19th is the Malcolm X birthday, and we look at how he traveled around the world, traveled to Europe and to Africa, and some of the things that he said, the way that Pan-Africanism is something that we've got to get back to. We've got to figure out how to join forces with our allies who are non-African and non-African descent, but with the sense that these brothers and sisters who came over here on boats out of desperation from countries where they were fleeing violence or economic downturn have been put in positions in which I'm sure they are treated terribly because, as a visitor, I'm here as a scholar. I'm here to give a presentation next week on this book I'm working on right now. And I think I'm leaving a week and a half after I give my presentation. So these people who are here out of desperation to find some type of life are still placed in a situation of danger. And I pray for them. And I hope to later on today and this weekend talk to some of them to find out how life is going and maybe interview them for a future program. As I said, Malcolm X, May 19th is a date in which we have to pay homage again to a man whose life was sacrificed for the better good, like so many. May 22nd is Harvey Milk Day. And Harvey Milk, who was murdered in November 1978, and we know that Malcolm X too was murdered. And in this case, Harvey Milk was the San Francisco politician who was out and gay at the time, 1970s. He was murdered by Dan White, a white gentleman who then went on to claim the Twinkie defense. Yes. The Twinkie defense. He claimed that he had eaten so many Twinkie cupcakes that the sugar had driven him temporarily insane. Yes, that was his defense. You can look it up. In this time period in which we have so many white supremacists, this mindset of ignorance in which they believe they can murder anyone who's going to stand in the way of change in this country is real. And it bothers me to the extent that I wonder, where are our Black leaders? Where are the leaders of color? Where are the ones who I saw at Harvard, Yale, University of Chicago, Princeton, and Penn, you know, Stanford, where are these elite people who went to these private colleges and spent all this money to rise up in the ranks? Where are they when we are under attack? We can't really trust the police department. I'm sure there are people in their goodwill because I've met some before they went into the force, but I don't know who they are. And they know within the police department that there are dangerous people who are armed, villainous minded racists within our police departments, within our political government, state, local, and federal. Where are the leaders to speak to this issue? We're having conversations about it on the air. We're having conversations with our relatives. Where are they? They have the education. They have the clout. They've scratched and clawed and charismaed their ways up to the top. And yet they're pretending they don't see any of this. They're pretending that their degrees, their doctorates, that whatever their fine grooming is going to protect them from these racist people who probably hate them more, because a lot of these racists believe that these very people who have achieved so much have stolen from the lower white classes. Where are the Black elite? Where are the politicians who have risen up into positions of power in our tri-state area? Yes. And you're saying, I represent everybody in my constituency, not just Black people. But there are people in your constituency who are not Black, who voted for you because they wanted a change. Can I get an amen on that one? My white brothers and sisters who are progressives and liberals voted for people of color because they wanted a difference. They wanted a change. And then you get in those positions of power. People of color in positions of political power, in positions of economic power. And now you say to yourself, I'm no longer a person of color. I'm no longer Black. I'm no longer Pakistani. I'm no longer from India. I'm no longer. No, now I am just an American in a job. Well, America requires courage right now. It requires people in whatever position of private or public power to see the writing on the wall. Over 5,000 people have been lynched in this country, and lynchings continue. People have been burned alive in this nation. For those of you who have come within the last generation, you may not know this, but please just go online, look up lynching and images, and you will see the bodies. George Armwood being one of them in Maryland. I want us to understand and demand from these people in the public and private sectors that they stop taking our lives for granted. For those to whom much has been given, much is expected. And that means more than just doing your job, having your degree, feeding your particular family. The rising up is on the backs of generations that gave everything for people to have progress in the life, not with the idea that you use it for your own personal gain and turn your back on everyone else. The sacrifice that's needed today is the sacrifice of those with a moral compass that takes them beyond the bank, the car, the private school, in their own home where they can be ensconced in protection. While the grandmothers and the children and those with disabilities and those who don't want to carry a weapon are out here vulnerable to the world, where are the leaders who are seeing the rise in white supremacy? I worked at Southern Poverty Law Center decades ago, and I saw the rise then. All you need to do is go on the websites, and you will see the rise in white supremacists and those who are willing to kill because they believe their future is in jeopardy. And that's happened with nationalism in the 1700s, the 1800s, the 1900s, and is happening right now. The difference is we had leaders back then who cared. We had the W.B. Du Bois and the Marcus Garveys. We had the Mary Church Terrells. We had the people, the Fannie Lou Hamers. We had the people who were willing to put themselves out in danger, possibly, or at least to use their voices to let people know they were not alone. Right now, whether or not they're in political office, whether or not they're heads of corporations, they have left us alone. We have been abandoned. And we need to understand that together, we are going to have to come up with a plan of action. And then once we start moving with our plan of action, these people will come along. You know, of course, they'll have to disown us first. But they'll come along because basically many of them have risen up on our backs and they've gained what they've gained because we thought out of pride that they cared about us and we contributed to their rise, believing that it was an investment and now realizing perhaps we were played as fools. I'm not sure. But at one point, we need to pull some coattails, send some letters, and let people know we see you in these positions of power, and you have a debt to the rest of society. We're not here just to buy your products and give you votes to maintain your fiefdom. If you don't recognize us, we will definitely start shining a brighter light on you. What do you have to say? I haven't heard from my listeners in a while, and you know, I believe I have the smartest listeners on radio. We have so many issues. We have a civilian killing another civilian, one white ex-military killing a young brother on the subway train. We have Clarence Thomas, whom we find has his mother's house, his son by name, but not by blood, tuition paid for. We have a lifestyle gained through wealthy, conservative men who, for the most part, if you saw the White House press dinner, have bought themselves a U.S. Supreme Court justice. We have a number of issues that I need you to tell me about. What's been happening? I've been gone for a week or so. What's going on in the tri-state area? Give me a call. And may I tell you about one other thing that's on my mind? And this is something that happened at Harvard. And some of you know that I was there this past fall and met a number of different people, had some of my assumptions supported, and other ones challenged, I'll say. I want you to know about something called swatting, S-W-A-T-T-I-N-G. Swatting, I didn't know about this, and maybe you did. Swatting, this is when someone calls the police department in order to engage the SWAT team, that special armed team with special weapons coming in full force to attack an unknown person. And this is a way in which they terrorize other people. So it's not enough that we have Karens and others calling the police when someone is selling Girl Scout cookies or having a barbecue or just walking through their own neighborhood. Now we have people who are calling the SWAT team, making false reports that there's someone armed and dangerous in a house where Black people live. And in this particular instance, a dormitory room on Harvard's campus. Calling the police so that they will engage an armed force by saying that there is an armed person who's dangerous and waving a weapon. And in this instance, four seniors, women who were asleep in their dorm room at 4 a.m. had police armed come to the door, let themselves in, and placed weapons to the heads of these students, told them to raise their hands and walk out into the hallway under gunpoint. They said, quote, "We felt our lives were in danger. We are traumatized." This happened at Harvard. And I wonder how many more instances of taking place. This took place in April, on April 6th, with four undergraduate students. How much terrorism, how much more for people of African descent who have been here since the arrival in 1619, and before that, actually. 1619, August, the arrival of 20 and odd Africans before all of these other people, for the most part. The Mayflower landed in 1620. We were here before the Mayflower. And for how long has this terrorism gone on? How much more are we supposed to take from people who are truly insecure, truly weak-minded, and with a hole inside of their souls that's so desperately large, it cannot be filled by any amount of terrorism? Only self-love can fill that hole. You, good morning. You're on Law of the Land.
Yes, good morning. How are you doing, Ms. Brown Marshall?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
Yes, you're on the road now. I wish you God's grace and you're traveling and out in the world here. Yes, you've been missed on the air. Believe that. Okay, this is JB from Brooklyn.
How are you doing?
I don't know. I'm. You know, you have a little more experience on me, but I am bewildered by what I'm experiencing in the world right now. Mr. Jordan Neely, that was a textbook lynching of Mr. Jordan Neely. And people don't seem to be responding like that. Just like Mr. Emmett, just like Emmett Till, our ancestor, this man felt that Jordan Neely was somehow assailing white sensibilities, and he had to act just like the monsters that went and extracted Emmett Till from his uncle's house. And he went and choked the life out of a human being, never faced a judge. The police just slapped him on his back and sent him on his way, just like in the Deep South. So the matter of all this nonsense about bail policy, he only recently got bail. And I, you know, whether it was traditional bail, woke bail, or whatever, he only recently faced the judge to get that matter assessed to him. And
I want to ask you this question, because I support what you're saying. Where is our mayor in this? I mean, that's why I've been talking about these ideas around Black leadership. Is it that their ambition was all this was about? They get in these positions of power and it's like, you know, they pretend as though they're still not a part of the community. Like we're some kind of, you know, freaks left over who have just not been able to realize that the power is all in white hands. And once you give yourself over to the power of whiteness, then you too will see that that race means nothing until something like this happens.
Wow. Don't start me with the mayor now, because it's very interesting now that he's jumped to the fore with this matter with the asylum seekers. And he's Superman dealing with this. There's an organization called the Conference of Mayors, nonpartisan, that has a very strong official policy against about this. I haven't heard him speak to this organization. It's not, there were many Republican mayors that have signed on a statement to get Biden to get active about this. But no, as you said, Mayor Adams has allowed himself to be used by political forces here in New York to his benefit, I'm sure, in many ways. And I'm it's just bewildering. Anyway, but it's supposed to be a conversation. Okay, yes, I agree with you, though. That is just beyond me. Mayor Adams pretty much being pretty mute on a range of matters.
But every time he comes on and wears an NYPD cap, it just makes me really... What? Shiver. And I'll tell you, when Bloomberg was mayor, if he was then wearing a Bloomberg cap, meaning I'm here as a corporate official, I'm not here as your mayor. When you start wearing this indicia of whatever job you had before, you're no longer representing the people, you're representing the job. And so my concern is with him or anybody else, when you're elected into a position of power. Yes, we know you're, you know, still connected with NYPD and all of that. We also know it was a police officer who beat the hell out of him when he was a kid. So I'm trying to figure out, you know, if the allegiance to the real estate interest, which I think has a lot to do with what's going on with him in Brooklyn, and he can have, you know, people have friends, they have allegiances, but where is the line? I mean, do we have to have some unwieldy investigation before we find out, you know, that this was just, we're trying to believe in people? And are we just foolish for believing in any of these people anymore? Once they get to a certain place, it's almost as though they're like those relatives who get highfalutin and forget they have family. I want to go to our next caller, but I thank you so much for raising Jordan Neely, you know, and I do believe it was a lynching. And as I said before, lynchings are taking place all around us. There was a noose on the mall of the Capitol with Michael Pence's name on it, a rope that was there, a gallows. I don't know why it is that we're believing in this fairy tale of this country and not realizing the murderous that stream that flows to this country has never stopped flowing. It's always been here, but we can be better than we are right now if we recognize that if we don't do something, those spectators who are standing by watching those people get slaughtered will soon find their family members and perhaps even themselves harmed as well. This is the next caller on the line. This is WBAI 99.5. Good morning.
Good morning to you. You have a great show. It's good to hear you, and you be safe out on the road.
Thank you.
What I was going to say, as far as Thomas, I'm already out of Queens, New York. As far as Clarence Thomas, nothing he does surprises me, because the truth is most of us who, you know, pretty much knew back in 91 where he was coming from. So, you know, and when you had all those different people on the other side, Republican, who were for him and were against Ms. Hill, and the things that were said, and as we all recall too, and unfortunately Biden was involved, he was there too. But, you know, to see all of them standing together, then once he pulled out that, all of a sudden now he becomes one of us and pulled out that high-tech lynching crack. And this is, anyway.
And I don't even think he made that up. I think they gave that to him, because I don't even see him coming up with that phrase, that was a high-tech lynching, because he came forward with the truth on television and, you know, and he denied it. But, you know, the just like with Kent, with Kavanaugh, you know, there were probably other people too, but like with Kavanaugh, they weren't given the opportunity to speak.
Kavanaugh, a man who, you know, this guy paid all Crow, paid all his money for Thomas, and Kavanaugh, he probably could have gotten for a keg of beer. So go figure, you know. But what I was going to say, too, is so that doesn't really surprise me, because this was also, too, back before the days of Fox. And in 91, you basically had regular television, Channel 4, you know, the others, and CNN. And then later, Fox. And Fox was invented by people who were back in the Nixon administration, thought that those Walter Cronkite, Dan Rather, liberals were getting away with murder. We need to tell our side of the story. And that did all, as Lena Horne once sang in a song, that did all that begatting, because now you got News Max and some others, News Nation, and they're all pretty much running the same, you know, the same bunch of crap. But I'm watching also with what's happening with the young man who was killed, and then, you know, the people who are now going on the side of the young Marine who had choked him, and no one wants to talk about the fact that, reminding you, the man was put in a chokehold for 15 minutes. If a cop put you in a chokehold, a man had a knee on another man's neck for almost 10 minutes, and he died. You have to turn around and say to yourself, you know, even if, when do you turn around and say that enough is enough? Because even a police officer who had put someone in a chokehold for 15 minutes would have, hey, we got to talk about this. You know what I'm saying?
But here's a concern I have, and I'm just going to put this out here like this. I might be old fashioned, but I remember when the day was, if you were trained as a boxer and you used that training to hurt a civilian who was not a boxer, then the onus was on the person who had the training not to use that training against the civilian who did not have that training. So what happened to that argument that you cannot just use physical training like that, that's gained from the military, against an unknown civilian who does not have, and is not in your weight class, does not have that training, because your body is a weapon? So I don't understand, prosecutors, if you're hearing me, please pass the word. Maybe it's been a long time since this was stated, but could someone please raise this as well?
You're now going to get, as we're noticing, the going to different corners where you got all these people want to support, and you get naturally the certain people, pundits on Fox and others, who will talk about this young man was fighting for, you know, these basically black people who roam the subways acting crazy. And that's how they're going to try to put it out. And it's, you know, it's basically a crock, but it's.
Well, but thank you so much. I'm going to take that into consideration. And I'm concerned at this point that someone wants to take the side of a person who's going to have a stranglehold on someone who's got military training. And police are going to let this person just walk away. And that's why I began the show by saying, whom can we trust? We don't know what civilian. And if then this person comes back and says, oh, I have PTSD, and that's why I acted in this way, then it's not just a normal person who's feeling harassed by somebody on the train. It's somebody with mental issues on both sides. So then we have mental issues. We have race. We have a history of people who have tormented and lynched other people. So there are a lot of issues here that I think that need to be discussed. And it can't be discussed evenly when a life has been lost, a life has been taken. And that was not force used against someone because they received equal force. It was force used because he had the power to take a life, and he knew he had that power. And we'll find out later, probably he's taken lives before. This is Law of the Land with Gloria J. Brown Marshall. We're going to come back after this musical break. 212-209-2877. Yes, you have me riled up. I've got to calm down. Calm down. 212-209-2877. I want to hear from you. This is a year from the Buffalo Massacre in Buffalo, New York. And where are we as far as using the Emmett Till bill? That was a lynching as far as I'm concerned. And why is it that these young white men and other white men, if they don't take their own lives, live to stand trial? Why is it the police don't gun them down, but they're gunning down people with no weapon in their hand? I'm asking these questions, and maybe those police officers listening could ask themselves of their peers to themselves, because, you know, they're probably afraid to ask out loud. How is it that these white people are able, Dylann Roof, who murdered women in their 80s in a church in South Carolina, how is it that he can stand trial? Why is it police department didn't feel that he was a threat to their life, even though they knew exactly what he had done? They took him out to McDonald's and gave him a hamburger because he was hungry. That's Dylann Roof in South Carolina. That murder took place there, mass murder in the church after they prayed for him, trying to trigger a race war that people keep trying to trigger, and our leadership seems to pretend does not exist. 212-209-2877. We'll be right back. Mint Julep by the Clovers. That was a special request. And I'm on fire. So I'm going to give you a chance to talk more and I'll talk less. But we have to talk quickly because we're running short on time. Good morning. You're on Law of the Land.
Good morning, Gloria. This is Samuel Goodman out of New Jersey.
Hi. What's going on your mind?
A lot. So you said you'll let me talk, so I have a lot to say. You said that they're trying to trigger a race war, and then you said that it already started. And it actually has. And you said that our so-called leaders are not acknowledging it. And they're just trying to play that safe. You know, everything that's happening, you know, is a race war. Now, whether you want to feed into it or accept it, that's your ideology or your belief or your stance, but it's still happening. Everything that's happened, all these killings, you know, I'm 51 years old. I was born in 1972. You know, my dad was in Vietnam, you know, but I grew up in the 80s and 90s and, you know, the 2000s, you've seen all these murders and stuff. This is extermination. It's one by one. It's not random acts. We keep treating it like it's random acts. You know, every incident where we choose which incidents to protest, to have massive protests. We need to protest and revolt against every incident, you know, and I'm speaking to all the listeners out there. We have to grow exponentially. We have to expand our knowledge exponentially to people that aren't listening to WBAI because they're unaware. They're glued to social media. The younger people with these TikToks and the Instagram, so they're not getting the right information. For example, I listen to WBAI, and I would not have known about this Harvard incident, right? So, but again, these are acts of war. These are white, you know, racist people. And then you have the public. Then you have law enforcement, and we talk about policy. If you look at the word policy, and then you look at the word police, and then you look at the word politics, they're all the same.
Okay. Okay. But you know what? Because we have a lot of people. What's your last thought? Because I agree with a lot of what you said. What's your last thought?
The last thought is that we have to mobilize. You know, a lot of people in our communities, we have to mobilize, organize. We're protected, you know, under the Constitution to, you know, the right to bear arms to protect ourselves. And we have to get back to that. You know, we have to look at what even our black soldiers from the beginning, from the Revolutionary War, the Civil Wars, World War II, even in the Civil Rights Movement, we have to take that stance because, like, you know, one of the Black Panthers said, he said, you know, war, he said, politics is war without bloodshed, and, you know, and war is politics with bloodshed. So we can't just keep sitting by and just all, you know, thoughts and prayers. We have to organize, and we have to take stands, and we have to protest every single incident.
We have to organize. We have to take a stand. We have to protest. We have to be aware, and we have to push the people who are in positions of power to recognize what's going on. I agree. Thank you. This is Law of the Land with Gloria J. Brown Marshall. You are the next person on the air. People are saying some deep stuff, and I want to hear it. Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Brown Marshall. Maybe I should say buongiorno. This has been absolutely riveting, and I normally am upstate New York. I'm back down in Harlem, where I lived for over 15 years before being dislocated up there and helping a friend of 30 years who's encountered some really serious difficulties, and his family's out of the city. This is Pastor Michael Vincent Crea, C-R-E-A.
We don't have a lot of time, my reverend friend.
I understand. I just want you to know you can go to Facebook, Michael Vincent Crea. I want to give solutions and address what you've said. First of all, here in Harlem, from the activists, I was educated in the 10th level, where it's not enough to have a black face in a high place. David Dinkins had drop-in centers. I housed people at Trinity Church. I've never seen what I've seen on the subways. And my service dog and I, since January, have slept on the subways for 100 days, was robbed 3 times, even attacked by the police who harassed the people every day. I got someone back to China in 15 days when Bloomberg got a Falcon back to Fifth Avenue. Here's some solutions. One, let's not put new coffee into old filters. White does not exist. I have racist Italian relatives. I have rational Italian relatives. I have racist Irish relatives. And I have rational Irish relatives. Humanity is a collective noun like symphony. There is no minority. No one should be checking a box after a white box. I've had to tell Africans, this literally happened last month. There were African garb people waiting on the corner down by Staten Island Ferry. There was no cars, and I crossed the street telling them, you don't have to wait for the white man on the machine to tell you when to walk. That's part of the problem. We need to have human rights courts. It's not a civil right. Housing is a human right. Eating is a human right. Jerome Murdaugh was arrested for sleeping and was fried to death at Rikers for sleeping. So we have to start putting new coffee into new filters. Why can't you or I bring in the hater, bring in the molester, bring in the bad cop? I talked to Eric Garner when he had a breast. But I didn't learn chokeholds at my Catholic high school that Pantaleo went to. So we have to have human rights courts. bring in these people in 15 days and put people before property and privilege. If a property owner can order me out of my house in Ithaca, where your taxes and my rent was paid every day, every month, for 2 years, but he imitated, just like we have copycat shooters, we had copycat property pimps like Trump and Kushner. And he failed 4 federal inspections. The basement flooded 3 times. I asked for reasonable accommodation. So we have to be able to bring these creeps into court. We need
I agree with you. And but for the 10 people who are waiting, I would have more for us to discuss. But we have to let a few more people speak, okay? Thank you. This is there, you know, we're going to have more time for us to have these conversations because everyone is speaking on things that are crucial. Housing, food, police brutality, these crucial things deserve more than the amount of time we have. For this particular show, we will have other shows in which we can talk more about these very important issues. Our next caller is up. This is Law of the Land. You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, you're on.
How you doing, Ms. Brown Marshall? I just want to say one, especially I noticed that the media, the corporate interest media and the big pharma paid media, they made this guy, the Michael Jackson impersonator, seem to be worthless and deserved to be, it was justifiable that he was killed by the white Marine. And
so true. I am so glad you mentioned that. I was hoping that someone would raise this issue. I didn't want to just take over and do that. But yes, this is what so many people in the media do, especially when it's a black white issue. And yes, until they change the adjectives, adverbs, and descriptors, black and white is what we're dealing with right now. And yeah, yes, they made him right. into this crazy person, this little thin guy. They made right. him into this crazy person deserving yes. of death. But please go on.
And another thing, they held this guy in the chokehold for 15 minutes and said he was being restrained. That's not a restraint. That's a chokehold. And if it was a white man who was an Elvis impersonator, who was on that same train, and a black Marine with 2 other white guys choked him to death like that, he would have been arrested by the police, no questions asked, immediately, no bail set. And
he probably wouldn't even be here because the police would have gunned him down.
Right.
Let's just be cold-blooded about the truth in this country. And that's why I said before, you can have white mass murderers walk free. Yeah. If they don't take their own life, they're put in handcuffs and gently taken to jail mayor. And then stood before the judge.
Now, the monkey mayor, the slave mayor, I don't know what his interest is in the corporate world and the big pharma world and Hollywood. He doesn't care about black life, and He shows where his interest lies in real estate.
Well, I would not call him a monkey mayor. I take that some umbrage. I don't like that at all.
He's terrible. He's terrible in our community. We voted for him, and he does the same thing over and over since he was a state senator. It's just a shame what he's doing to the interest.
Well, I need you because we have 5 more people waiting. I need you to give me your last point.
My last point is that we should boycott the MTA and use the seriousness of boycotting the MTA for things and the media. Start boycotting the media and the MTA. Certain media's interest that not lies in the black communities, start boycotting them. That's what you should do.
Thank you. I'm glad we're going to have a show on solutions. That's very, because I'm not one who just complain. I want to complain and do something about the issue. We have time for 2 more callers. You're on Law of the Land with Gloria J. Brown Marshall. Good morning.
Good morning. Is that me?
Yes.
Okay, listen, what I was wondering about the young man that got murdered that was doing the Michael Jackson. Now, they say Hochul and I guess the mayor, they was already familiar with him. So if he was homeless, how come they didn't reach out to him? I'm wondering, did they reach out to him, try to find him housing? Did they call crisis intervention? I'm puzzled about that, because when de Blasio's wife was there, she sort of inhaling mental illness. But now, did they offer him housing since they were already familiar with his mental illness?
I'm not sure, but that is something to look into. And it's in, and you know, the fact that homeless by itself is houseless. These are people who are usually the evicted. They are people who at some point lived under a roof. And for us to treat homelessness as a crime in and of itself, because it results in loitering or time spent on the train, I just think it's horrific, the inhumanity that we're showing to other human beings, to the point where you could just take a life, that this man just took a life like that and walked away, and the police let him walk away. What kind of respect can you have for a police force, for a mayor, for a criminal justice system that would allow a life to be taken like this? And this is going on, over 1,000 people a year die at the hands of police. We just happen to be in New York City to witness this one, as opposed to some small town somewhere else, as the other listener said, where we don't know and don't have the protest. We're down to our last, I'm trying to squeeze in some very, very quickly. This is Law of the Land. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Let me just say that I'm going to try to answer the question you asked about why the police officer doesn't do the same thing to white suspect that they do to blacks. Number one, they know they're not going to get away with it. As a retired police officer, I've been retired over 30 years. Let me say this to you. When a white cop pulls a gun on a young black man, he doesn't see his own son. It's been a clear-cut case where a white officer down in North Carolina chased a couple of kids through the bright snake-infested swamps. And when he was asked the question, why didn't you shoot? Because they had burglarized a home in a upscale neighborhood. He said, every time I went to pull my trigger, I saw my own son. And this is what white cops see. They see their own sons. Not only that, but the white police officer knows very well he's not going to get away with some of these killings and beatings that he does if he do them to a white man. It's not going to happen. And the black cop who stands up, you understand what I'm saying? He is singled out, and unless he's smart enough to make every derogatory thing said to him by his supervisor on the pages of his legal memo book, when you do that, they fear you because they know they can't erase it. You see, and that's what I did. You see, I let them know when I was a police officer, if you don't do it to whites, you better not do it to blacks, not in my presence. So whenever something went down, if I showed up, they ran right to me, tried to start explaining to me. But you got to understand something. When you stand up as a black police officer, the black guy is showing you also. So everybody does not have balls. So you have to understand.
Well, I was told, sir, that this young man, Jordan Neely's father, was a member of NYPD. And my concern, and I heard this from a white gentleman I was on the air with years ago, and he said on the air, and this has to be 15 years ago, white people kill black people because they know they can get away with it. White cops kill not out of lack of training. That might play some small role. It's because they know they can get away with it, which takes us back. If prosecutors do not prosecute, then this will continue. The role of the prosecutor is essential here because you are playing part of the problem out to its most bloody result. That you are allowing, prosecutor, when you are failing to, little by little, if you're allowing the small assaults to take place, you're giving umbrage to the larger ones that can lead to the murders. So I'm looking at this and I wonder the black police officers, and I know I'm at the end of my show, but the black police officers who are afraid of the white cops, the white police officers of goodwill, the ones who do care, who are in the job to help people, are afraid of the rogue cowboy cops who are within the force. All of this is taking place all around us. And it's and now what's so interesting, I think a lot of our progressive and liberal friends who have been sitting back thinking, oh, black and brown people complain too much. Too many of the people who immigrated into this country after we built the country worthy of immigration for them. Oh, so many of you people, you complain too much. But now that the veil has been lifted, and as one of the listeners said, the race war has already had skirmishes. It might not be complete hand-to-hand combat yet, to, in my mind, the way I envision it. But yeah, there have been enough battles, skirmishes, enough bloodshed, enough people killed for us to know that this is real. And this is also the anniversary, close to the anniversary of the Tree of Life Synagogue murders. That mass murder in Pittsburgh at this point was the largest mass murder of Jews in this country that we know of. So it's not just going to be a black and white thing. It's going to be you're on the other side of the cause for which these insane people believe thing. And the end result will be ugly. We've got to come together. We've got to plan. We've got to have some idea, first and foremost, the situation at hand so that we can come up with solutions. And it doesn't have to be one solution, but we do have to have a vision, not just anti-white supremacy, anti-patriarchy. The women on the line listening right now, you have to realize that what's going on is because by 2045, there will not be enough white babies to satisfy these people. And therefore, they believe that they have to destroy people of color and implant more babies into the wombs of white women in order to maintain a country that they want to maintain. We've had some serious discussion today. And with that, I say, please take care of yourself and others. Sun in the sky.